Maybe it's one of those karate weirdos like in the movies. Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And today, I am here to review A Force of One starring Chuck Norris. Here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. A Force of One is a Christmas movie. Kind of. It's less of a Christmas movie than The Warrior's Way was. The Warrior's Way seems like the entire third act was built around the fact that it was Christmas and taking place right around Christmas time, whereas A Force of One just, I think they were filming it at Christmas time, so there just happens to be decorations laying around. But this is by far one of Chuck Norris's best films. If you have a hard time with the Christmas movie part, I think you can get on board with me on that. This is one of Chuck Norris's best movies. It grossed five times its budget at in the box office. It's also one of his best acting performances. I know that can be a bit of a low bar for Chuck, but he's cast into a very natural role here for him. A role that I'm kind of surprised he ended up not getting typecast into. Chuck Norris, throughout his career, typically played, you know, the local law enforcement, or a Vietnam vet, or the local law enforcement who is a Vietnam vet. That was like his go-to role for most of his career. But here, Chuck is playing a very natural character. A full contact karate champion who owns a dojo. You know, the very thing he was doing prior to becoming an actor. Like this, the fact that this ended up not being the character that he always plays in movies is just kind of surprising to me. And it just feels very natural. The way that he is carrying himself, the line delivery, how he is, it just feels very natural, as opposed to a little bit more stiff acting that you get from Chuck in his other films. And that also goes with saying the fact that this is one of his earliest films as well. This is his third leading role. Breaker Breaker has already come out, and so has Good Guys Wear Black. So to have a very good acting performance this early on in his career is a good sign. Again, we kind of know where the acting is going to head and what roles he's going to typically be cast into, but where he is in this movie honestly feels the most right and the most natural. I love Chuck Norris in this movie. Now, this movie is a bit historical, got a little bit of a landmark here in it. Not so much for the career of Chuck Norris, though again, it is a very good Chuck Norris film, but because this is the film debut of Bill Superfoot Wallace. Bill Superfoot Wallace was an undefeated 23-0-0 kickboxing world champion and a very scary man. You go back and you watch those fights from Bill Wallace's career back in the day, like 70s through the 90s. Oh my gosh. That man had a devastating knee injury and you never would have known. He was able to just tweak his fighting style and still make it work. Had one of the most devastating looking sidekicks. And, of course, was extremely flexible. He could do the full splits. That was part of his, like, his persona in the ring, if you will. And even, you know, 20 years ago when I first started getting into the martial arts, I remember flipping through Black Belt magazines and seeing advertisements and articles with Bill Superfoot Wallace in it, and there he is, still doing the splits. I don't know if the Grandmaster is still doing the splits at the age of 80, but I'm sure however flexible he is now is still more flexible than I and most of you listening are. So, like, and it's also just kind of funny seeing, you know, like, I grew up, again, 20 years ago getting into the martial arts, like, I kind of grew up with, like, fun grandpa Bill Wallace, and to go back and watch these like the old matches, or to watch his character who is just completely unhinged and coked up in this movie. It's just such a juxtaposition to see just like how different and jarring he was then versus how he is now. Oh my gosh. But this is a landmark film, because not only is it his film debut, but this is, we do get a showdown between Chuck and Superfoot here in this movie. We actually get three fights between the two in this movie. This adds on to the incredible lineage of Chuck Norris fights, right? We have the Bruce Lee match in the Coliseum in Way of the Dragon. Chuck Norris and Joe Louis faced off against each other a few times in real life in the full contact karate world. We have him and Bill Superfoot Wallace here. That I do think it is a bit of a shame that in all of this, we never got Chuck Norris versus Jim Kelly, either in real life or in a film. I mean, they're both making movies at the same time. They're both big figures in the like point sparring, full contact karate world, like right around the same time. And the fact that those two never crossed paths is a real shame. I would have, especially in a movie, I think I would have loved to have seen them go up against each other, maybe be in like almost like a buddy cop kind of film with the two of them. My idea, and I don't know if this would have been a movie back in the day, honestly, but my idea is that my pitch would have been that Chuck Norris plays a cop, obviously. Chuck Norris plays a cop who's investigating a series of violent crimes in a more urban part of town where Jim Kelly is running a dojo. And they have a bit of friction because Chuck Norris basically it's a cultural clash, right? Chuck Norris being like the stereotypical white cop, law and order, and Jim Kelly representing like the voice of the marginalized in the story. And ideally, Chuck Norris has some growth. Chuck Norris's character, I should say, has some growth. And in the film, but again, if it was made in the 70s or 80s, I don't know if that would have been the case, but that would have been my pitch. And obviously at some point they probably would have had like a little square off in the dojo that Jim Kelly runs, and Jim Kelly probably would have won that one, but then at some point they probably would have had another show, kind of a little bit more like a friendly sparring match. Almost like, is that Rocky III that it ends with Rocky and Apollo Creed? They like freeze frame on them, kind of punching each other. Like that kind of an ending with Chuck Norris and Jim Kelly as well. But anyway, enough fan fiction. So back to the actual movie I'm reviewing today, A Force of One. So as I said, Bill Superfoot Wallace plays this unhinged, coked up psychopath. And this is where the plot of this movie makes some sense, especially given the time period. And then it also like goes off the rails all at the same time. So there is a narcotics unit somewhere. I missed it. If they say where this movie is taking place, I completely missed it. Full disclosure. Based off the fact that there are Christmas decorations, but there's no snow, I'm going to say California. So somewhere in California, there is a narcotics unit investigating a drug ring. It's just really bad. There's a ton of drugs, like all of them. All of the drugs are in this town, especially cocaine. Yes, this is, though Chuck Norris is playing a different character here than he normally plays, this is following a typical plot line that Chuck Norris movies will also dive into, the war on drugs. So there is a drug ring going on in this town, and an undercover narcotics unit is trying to break it up, obviously. But anytime any of the narcotics agents go to investigate locations or people, they are murdered. And during a presentation by the coroner, he points out the fact that the way that the people are getting killed indicates that this is not just like someone getting hit by heavy blunt objects just like haphazardly, but instead that these are very precise, devastating blows that these people are taking, that this is being done by somebody who knows what they are doing rather than just like trying to overpower someone, which prompts one of the narcotics agents to say, oh, you mean like one of those karate weirdos in the movie? And so, yeah, that's the theory that they're going to work with, that there is a, as they dub it, a karate killer on the loose, picking off the narcotics agents one by one. And although this Silent Rage is Chuck Norris's one, at this point in time, one and only film that can be qualified as a horror movie, this isn't a horror movie, but you do get like a splash of horror in this flick with this like serial killer element to it, because it is like, it's a little bit creepy. It's got like a little dash of horror, but the movie itself is not a horror movie. It's a Christmas movie, but it's not a horror movie. I will give you that much. Because there is allegedly a karate killer on the loose, the cops decide, well, you know what? We should fight fire with fire and get our own karate expert. And so they go to track down the local full contact karate champion who owns a dojo. That's right, Chuck Norris. He's playing the character here, Matt Logan. And he is currently preparing for his next big title defense against a man named Sparky, who, yep, that's his name. That's what they picked. A man named Sparky, who is, of course, being played by Bill Superfoot Wallace, who is also, yes, the alleged karate killer picking off the narcotics agent. Yeah, he is essentially the muscle for the guys who are running this drug ring, is what's going on here in the film. So it kind of works, and then it does get a little bit silly, and also the fact that the cops have, I don't know, no fighting training? This is like a thing still to this day that I hear that about local law enforcement. It seems like it just, because of how because of how local law enforcement works and is governed and how decisions are made and money is spent, in some places you're going to find a lot of hardware, if you know what I mean, a lot of guns, a lot of fancy trucks. And then there's going to be some who actually like get their local law enforcement trained well, like in hand-to-hand combat. Either way, cops are kind of violent. Merry Christmas. You basically, in this movie, the cops are completely incompetent. I'll just pivot back to the movie. The cops are kind of incompetent. Very incompetent, actually, outside of Jennifer O'Neill's character, who is also the designated love interest for Chuck Norris in this movie. She's the only one that can kind of think through situations. The rest of these narcotic agents are just fodder to be killed by Bill Wallace, honestly. Again, that's how you know that this is like a dash of a horror movie, because it's just got a couple people who are just plain expendable. They're there to be killed by the serial killer. Ultimately, the drug ring is brought down. Sparky is defeated, and Chuck Norris saves the day. And not the cops, because basically the whole narcotics unit was either dirty or killed. Except for Jennifer O'Neill. We get three matchups here between Chuck Norris and Bill Wallace in this movie. The first one, Bill Wallace is going to try and kill Chuck Norris. And so he shows up full ninja garb and nunchucks and jumps him in an alley. And it's Again, it's another one of those points. This movie is just like, it makes sense, and then it just takes like a silly turn all of a sudden and different. It's like, makes sense, silly, makes sense. And this is one of the silly parts. And then we do get a right proper in the ring matchup between Chuck Norris and Bill Superfoot Wallace. This championship match is essentially used as a sting to bring down this narcotics ring. And side note, I don't know if you have ever watched full contact karate or even old school kickboxing. It's nasty. And I mean that respectfully. It's, oh my gosh. There is, okay, so the movie open, well, sorry, Chuck Norris is introduced to, in the movie in a match, and it is just, I gotta figure out where the rules are somewhere. I believe, seeing how Chuck Norris and Bill Superfoot Wallace are in this movie, I don't think anything, except for the final fight, I'll get to it. I don't think that there's anything in this movie that's necessarily, like, inaccurately depicted, given the fact that, like, there's two experts in the room. Like, the fight choreography is going to make sense. And yet there's just, like, things that I'm like, wait, what's that Always Sunny in Philadelphia? What are the rules? Like, what are the rules here? Holy cow. Like, there's one in this match early on when Chuck Norris is first introduced. He's fighting a guy, and it looks like a kickboxing match. It's full contact karate, but it looks like kickboxing. I did read that kickboxing and full contact karate had very nuanced rules that helped it differentiate the two from each other. But they're going along. And then Chuck Norris throws the guy, like the arm drag, when judo throw, when you like wrap the arm over the shoulder and then you throw the guy. I'm like doing it, even though you cannot see me. I'm doing it. I'm hopefully not going to bump my microphone as I'm twisting. But yeah, like he does that move. No grappling, no submission attempts, but you can throw your opponent. And then the match between Chuck and Bill in the ring. Again, like I said, if you go back and watch these old fights with Bill Superfoot Wallace, they're intense. His sidekick could, like, gut a person. And what's interesting is, like, okay, this is going to be a weird turn, but go with me on this. If you've been listening to this show for a while, though, you know that the weird turns are just a thing here. You've probably come to expect me to make, like, weird turns at different points. So when you watch a movie like this, or you watch like actual fight footage from the 70s and 80s of full contact, karate, kickboxing, the whole bit, I think that actually puts into perspective a lot more the difference, the juxtaposition, used that word twice now in this episode, between Cobra Kai and Miyagi-Do karate. Like, for those of us like me, who time period wise is very much removed from that context, I think watching those fights, watching movies like this that is supposed to be portraying it as a like a cinematic realism, if you will, like I think it really provides context for just how different the philosophy and methodology of Cobra Kai and Miyagi-Do karate are in the Karate Kid film. And I think it actually adds on to, again, I said this in the review of the Karate Kid earlier this year. In the 80s, they did not have this term, but I think it's still fitting. I think this is still a commentary on toxic masculinity. They were not using that term back then. I understand, but I think that is still part of the message of the movie. And a lot of that, I think, comes from the macho bravado that you see in this like full contact karate kickboxing world. And to be fair, Miyagi-Do karate is based off of Okinawan karate, which is what Jim Kelly did, and he did just fine in the karate contact fight world. But Cobra Kai's fighting system is based off of Tang Soo Do, which is what Chuck Norris did. So he did Korean karate too. So yeah, I think this kind of it's almost like a research thing. I sound super nerdy right now. It's kind of like a research thing of like when we understand what was being fed to the adults, what the adult martial artists were consuming, I think that actually helps us understand better like the why Cobra Kai is the way that they are. Just a thought. Anyway, then there's the final fight. And I'm getting to the 20-minute mark here, so I gotta keep track of my time, but I think I'll be fine on this one. The final fight, so during the in-ring match, you know, the cops show up, whichever ones haven't been killed yet. The cops show up, they start arresting people, but Sparky gets away. So Chuck Norris steals a police car because he actually has a permit that allows him to just commandeer vehicles whenever he wants to. Not his character, but Chuck Norris as a person. He is allowed to take anyone's vehicle whenever he wants to. That's just, he has a license for that. So he tracks down Sparky and they have their final fight at night, in an open field. And the more I watch these movies and really analyze them, the more I'm realizing that this is just a common centerpiece for our final fights. The at night, in an open field, no rules, no holds barred. They're just going at it. And Chuck Norris is about ready to deliver the devastating kill blow when Jennifer O'Neill's character shows up, pulls a gun out, and is like, don't do it. Because for the first time in Chuck Norris's career, he's not, I guess I shouldn't say first time, actually, these first few movies he makes, he's not a cop. But he's not a cop here, so you just can't go killing people. Cops shouldn't just be going and killing people either, full stop. But you can't just kill the guy, Chuck. So Chuck, like, you know, backs off. But Bill Wallace grabs, like, this random giant cement block thing that's laying on the ground for some reason, and he goes to hit Chuck Norris with it. Chuck breaks the concrete block, and then this kill blow at the end of the fight, at the end of the movie, is just so surprising. He doesn't do a jump round kick of any kind, you know, his signature kick. Jennifer O'Neill doesn't just shoot Bill Wallace. No, why would we do something simple? Instead, they lock up. They're kind of wrestling back and forth, Chuck Norris and Bill Wallace. Chuck brings him in. He's kind of got him like in a guillotine choke. And it's like, okay, he's just going to choke him out, break his neck, whatever. No, instead, Chuck Norris pulls one out of the pro wrestling handbook. And he rotates Bill Wallace upwards. So try to imagine this. The back of their heads are basically touching each other. And their bodies are positioned where between their backs are basically facing each other. So with them and the ground, they're forming a triangle. This is what we pro wrestling fans know as a swinging neck breaker. And in pro wrestling, what you do once you're rotated up into this like triangle position, both guys fall straight down to the mat. It's one of those moves that in pro wrestling, if you stop to think about it for 2 seconds, you realize, hey, actually both guys are taking a lot of damage with this move. Why is only one person selling it? But apparently when you do real swinging neck breakers, Chuck Norris has got him rotated upwards, and instead of both of them just falling straight down onto the ground, Chuck Norris brings Bill Wallace's head straight down on top of Chuck Norris's shoulder and breaks his neck. That's why that move is called a swinging neck breaker. Got it. Yeah, pretty devastating blow. If it was an actual horror movie, I feel like Chuck Norris probably would have like ripped his head off when he pulled his head down over his shoulder. His head just would have popped off. But yeah, that's how the movie, like credits roll with Chuck Norris and Jennifer O'Neill just kind of holding each other, kissing in the dark. Yeah, it's also very similar to how Ninja Vengeance ended. I don't think that was on purpose. Well, actually, maybe it was. Maybe Ninja Vengeance watched A Force of One and was like, yeah, we should do that ending because it was pretty similar, minus all of the racism. But yeah, swinging neck breaker. That's how you kill a coked up karate killer. Snap his neck with a pro wrestling move, folks. That's That's the moral of the story. You come across Jesus. Oh, but that was a force of one. Holy cow. It's a great movie. I enjoyed it so much. I would watch it again. I already own a physical media copy of it. I have a two-pack. It's that and Good Guys Wear Black. But I'm trying to do a better job of researching where movies are, even when they're ones that I own. And I believe I saw a listing for it on Tubi. If you want to go watch it to add on to your Christmas celebration. Have you enjoyed this bit I've been running with the past couple episodes? But that's it for me. Our time is running down. But I do want to take a moment. Actually, there's one more thing I want to mention about the movie. I just remembered. There is a great little Easter egg in this movie. At one point, they're at the dojo. Chuck Norris is talking, I think, to Jennifer O'Neill. And in the background, you see on the wall, there is a issue of Black Belt magazine framed on the wall. And the cover image on the magazine is a shot of Chuck Norris saying, "Good Guys Wear Black." I loved it. Loved that little Easter egg. I was like DiCaprio in that meme from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But that's it for me, and I do want to, this is the last episode of 2025, and so I just wanted to take a quick moment and say Merry Christmas, legitimately Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, you know, however you're choosing to celebrate this season, just I hope you enjoy your holidays. Happy New Year to you as well. You won't be hearing from me again until the New Year, and so I just, however you're choosing to celebrate this time of the year, I hope you're able to do it with family, with friends, and to be able to, though all of these holidays can be a little bit different, I hope that you can take some time to just celebrate hope and joy and peace this time of the year, because those seem to be common themes among many of the holidays that come up this time of the year. And a thank you to all of you for sticking with me this year. It feels good to get the first full year, first full calendar year in under my belt here with Kung Fu Pizza Party. And I'm really excited for next year. I got a lot planned for next year, and you'll hear all about it next week. I promise. Next week episode, for the first episode of 2026, is going to be a coming soon edition, talking about some of the big movies coming out in 2026 and some of the plans that I have for the year as well. Going to be attempting a full year-long theme. A little spoiler for you right now. I got a year-long theme. I have talked about it before on the show, but I'm going to kind of work it out a bit more in next week's episode. But just thank you for listening and tuning in every week and checking out the movies, engaging with me on social media. This has been like such a fun show for me to do, which is why I wanted to start a show like this. I wanted a podcast thing to be a little bit more fun, where my seminary life is a little bit more serious. Still have some weird fun over there too, because I'm weird. I'm one of those karate weirdos. I've actually never done karate, but I am a martial art weirdo, I guess you could say. But thanks for listening. All the stuff. Share the episode, review it, check out the other shows, check out my seminary life, just all the stuff. But most importantly, thank you and happy holidays. This has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I've delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and served up some wisdom one slice at a time.